Welcome, Minifiners. I hope you like that name. I know it's kind of nerdy, but I just could not help myself, so we'll see if it sticks. I hope you have a good cup of coffee or that you're driving safely to work and listening to this. I am thrilled to begin this podcast and invite you to episode one, The Helicopter Story, and open your eyes to my world. I can only hope that this story will inspire you, bring you joy and laughter, and bring a fresh perspective to the way that you think about crisis and bad things that have happened in your life. I promised you something both inspirational and funny, so I had to start with, I hope not my best story, but a very, very good one. The helicopter story is what I call it. I've called it that in front of many, many people. It's pretty common when I meet new people to be asked the craziest thing that's ever happened at a wedding. I think I kind of have this job that people are really curious about. And so that tends to be a common question at galas and dinner parties when people are trying to create conversation with me. And so I'm pretty sure that my husband has heard this story at least 10 times, but I'm going to share the revelation with you today, not just the experience. And the truth is that most people don't get me that raw and real at a dinner party. So this will be a new version, something I probably have never said out loud or even to my closest friends and family. So everyone listening will hear something new. So here we go. There are moments in life, I believe, that you need confirmation that you're on the right path. There's these minifinies in life. And it's like the universe decides to challenge you and say, are you sure? Are you really sure that you really, really want to do this and continue on this journey? And that's the test that I took a few years ago with the helicopter story. Most of the time, I just tell the fun version of the story, but I was working as a venue coordinator, and I'm pretty sure that we were suspicious before the ceremony, thinking that wedding party was doing things that were against contract and breaking the law, but we were kind of looking the other way because they hadn't even gotten hitched yet. I mean, really, in the wedding industry at least, I'm not that big of a jerk. If you pay $10,000, most of us are going to at least let you say your vows. I'm not going to shut it down before dinner and before you eat. That's at least what I think when I'm walking in. But I was pretty naive early on. And so when the ceremony ends and instead of calming down like I hoped, the issues and concerns just continued to be on the rise. And so I walked up to the couple and I told them, this is a really serious issue. It's illegal. It's a breach of contract. And you guys are doing things that are not okay. And I need your help. I need to tell guests to stop because we have the right to shut down your wedding right now. And we don't want to do that. And the groom starts telling me off, starts cursing, starts telling me it's not his job to police the guests, it's mine. And even though it was a really horrible interaction, I was kind of this bleeding heart. And I had, you know, gotten to know and built a relationship with other people, with the bride and her mom. And so I let them keep going and we let them eat dinner. And a half an hour later, maybe an hour later, we figure out that they're serving a bar out of a truck in the parking lot. And it's obvious at that point that they have no respect for their contract or for the law. It's only going to get worse. And I know that now. Now, after 7 years, I definitely know the warning signs. But I didn't know back then. I really had no idea how bad weddings could really get, how people could do horrible things in relation to or aside from somebody's really special day. I just am not built that way. My heart and soul, you know, hopes for the best in people and wants to love others like I love myself and love my family. And so I just had no idea that weddings could be a place where people sleep with the best man in the bathroom or where moms get so drunk because they want to forget losing their baby boy or girl. I just had no idea how crazy this industry was. And it's really fun and wonderful, but that early on I was a little trepidatious once I started seeing these horrible things. And so this night, we find out about the other bar and we tried our darndest to keep them going. I don't remember if we shut down the bars or what my supervisors made decisions at that point, but I remember thinking during toasts that the traditions must go on. And I mean, really, you have to wait until the photographer leaves. Otherwise, the cops showing up are going to be in the photos. So you have to at least wait until that point, like until the big stuff's over, and then just cut them off at the party. So long story short, I keep trying to talk to the couple and trying to get them to cooperate. And the breaking point was when the father of the groom, who was this huge football player of a dude, he had to have been 300 pounds or something, towers over me. And he says, "You are the girl who's ruining my son's wedding." And I don't remember exactly what he said after that, but I remember thinking that I was young and I had a long life to live and that I wanted to protect my staff from the ammo and the threats that were being hurled my way and protect them from those bullets. And I'm pretty sure my stepsister was standing behind me at that point. I think my staff witnessed it. And I hope to this day, at least, that they know it was kind of out of love and self-sacrifice that I stood there. But that's just my ego. So aside from that, I got away as soon as I could. And that was the night that Bruce, who was cool as a cucumber, this guy was took everything in stride. He was so calm, and I was bold and naive and hopeful and feisty, and neither of us wanted to kill a party, but we were a good balance for each other. And so we really, even though we didn't have it in our hearts to shut it down, when the football player of a dad gets up in the cute 24-year-old's face and threatens her, it's over. And the icing on the cake was that this group of people had gone into the main bar where all the regulars were and tried to start a riot. They were shouting that they were being mistreated. They tried to jump over the bar and steal bottles. And when people go crazy like that, your soft heart that was bleeding out for their taco dinner earlier that you didn't want to waste because they paid so much money for it, it just changes tune. It's over. And so you care a lot less about parent dances and a lot more about safety and survival. And so Bruce calls the cops and we go into lockdown, like tornado siren lockdown. We have people locked in the kitchen. We shut down all the bars. We have me locked up in the old kitchen where they're hoping that no one will be able to find me because I'm the most recognizable face. I'm the enemy who let them eat tacos and get married and dance everything important before we shut down the party for breaking the law. So next thing I know, we have 8 police officers showing up. Maybe 7 and a translator, actually, because we're in New Mexico, and it wasn't a Hispanic party or anything, but it was just, like, that's what you do in New Mexico. You send a translator. You never know what you're going to get. And so, thank God, they think of that, but they go above and beyond, and the local law enforcement thinks of bringing a helicopter. And so, here I am, locked up in the old kitchen, hearing a helicopter above the building and thinking, oh, my God, what's happening out there? And people keep coming to me and giving me updates and stuff, but we really did. They sent a helicopter with a spotlight in case someone damaged the property or stabbed me or a server and ran outside to escape in the yard or like out in the neighborhood. And that way they could find them, which is insane to me. That was total culture shock. I had no idea that things like this could happen or that, I mean, things like that happened in Albuquerque. Like I was clueless. So I think I found out, at the end of the night at some point, I don't know if it was Faye or if it was Bruce who came to get me, but that's where the story normally ends. And the truth is that I left that night after hiding in the kitchen for an hour and being saved by Bruce and the local police, and I was sure that my servers were never coming back. I just, little white girl from Nebraska, got to see the real world for a night, and I think I thought that they were seeing the same thing too. And it was this very eye-opening kind of coming of age almost moment to kind of enter into the real world. And so I was driving back on Monday or Tuesday probably, and I had been haunted by it all weekend. I was sure when I showed up that the word bitch in big, bright, I can picture it, it was like blue in my head, bright blue spray paint was going to be tagged on my office window. And I, of course, arrived, and there was no markings, and I sat down in my office, and I was sure that someone would arrive at any point in time ready to punish me or scream at me for shutting down the wedding, and I'm pretty sure I was on edge for at least a few days, if not a week. And all of the guys that worked with me were so wonderful and so supportive and protective. But I was down in this little office all by myself and at least 50 feet away from any human being and most of the time. And so I was sure that if I screamed for help, there would be no one around me. So it was this really pivotal moment. It really, now that I didn't know it at the time, but now when I look back, I know that it really rocked my world, and it was a turn and a change in my career, because I sat there for a week, and this is what I ask you now: do you really want to do whatever it is that you're doing, even if some days could be like that, could be that bad? I was asking myself, did I like it so much that even if my life was threatened, I would keep doing it? And so the universe is asking you through my voice today, how far are you willing to go? What could you survive and keep going? That's a big question. The universe does not play games. That's some serious shit right there. And so there's this blog from Mark Mason that I want to recommend to you. I read it a few months ago, and it was called 7 Strange Questions That Help You Find Your Life Purpose. He says to ask yourself what kind of shit sandwich you're willing to eat. And he's so right. He says, quote, that everything sucks some of the time. And that moment, that week of reflection a few years ago, at least until I had to focus on the next wedding, made it pretty obvious that even if I was threatened, that even if I ate a shit sandwich, I loved what I did enough to keep going. I just knew. And that's a huge gift. So I have to ask you, have you been tested yet? Have you eaten that sandwich and recognized that you could survive and live another day? Do you allow yourself to be enlightened by the crazy people and crazy circumstances around you? Or do you let them drag you down? I sincerely recommend praying for God or the universe or your higher power to prove to you that you're on the right path, or show you if you're not on the right one and it's not the right journey for you. Because even though I was pretty young, and even though I'm young now, I can look back even on only 30 years and see that everything that has happened to me has happened for a reason. Even the really crappy things, even the scary moments like that night, they were monumental into shaping who I am as a person. And so even though asking for a crap sandwich from the universe is probably not the way to go, I'm just not going to say I recommend that, it's pretty priceless to know that you know that you know what you're doing sits right with your soul. And I never thought I'd thank the football player dude for towering over me, but I am thankful today that that happened. It's clear to me that my fear turned into determination and that it has carried me to a really, really great place. I don't know that I'd be here today if I didn't have this story to share with you. So I want to leave you with a thought, along with all those rhetorical questions that I hope you'll meditate on this week until next Monday for the next Monifony. But next time life prevents you from doing something you want to do or presents a challenge, stay open. Ask God what you can learn from it. You never know what unexpected twists and turns will impact your life journey for the better, including this podcast. If this Monifony impacted your life for the better, if you reflect on it all week, or if it hits you hard in your gut today, please, please leave a review. Share and subscribe. Share it with your friends, with your family, everyone. And don't forget to search for Mark Mason's blog too, that 7 Strange Questions That Help You Find Your Life Purpose. You can go to alinabard.com and /podcast is the podcast link. But if you just scroll down, you'll be able to click and get there. And I'm going to put a post there, like a little link so that you can find Mark Mason's blog really quickly. And then feel free to go onto our Facebook and comment there too. I would love to hear. I am totally obsessed with this, especially right now. I would love to hear what how you've survived or what crazy thing happened to you that what your story is for your monophony about this monumental twist or turn in your life. Share with me. Let me know. I'm so excited to hear your survival story. Or if you're on the other end, feel free to put that too, that you're hoping for that, that you're praying for that. And I will ask the universe for that for you as well and give you a little soul spirit backup. I hope you'll tune in next week to Monophonies. And for today, from the bottom of my soul, thank you for listening.